There's a little song that we sing in our movement down in the South. I don't know if you've heard it, but it has become the theme song. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome.
I am covered in goosebumps listening to that, aren't you?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
People across Illinois are honoring Martin Luther King Jr. with service projects, celebrations. Something I just learned that is fascinating. In 1973, Illinois was the first state to declare his birthday a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to do some learning this morning. Vice President for Interpretation and Education at the Chicago History Museum, John Russick, is with us. Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a great day. It's a beautiful day outside. A little snowy, but that's appropriate for this time of year.
Did you also get goosebumps listening to that speech?
Always.
Every time.
Every time. It's amazing how there are a few speeches that do that, right? You listen to them, and they don't get old, and I think that's partly because they speak eternal truths, right? They're about the kind of people we want to be and the kind of country we want to be part of and the way we want to think about other people, we want them to think about us.
John, I know this is purely speculation, but I would love to hear your answer. What do you think Dr. King would think about what's going on in the country today?
Well, you know, it's interesting to speculate, of course. Obviously, none of us know what Dr. King would have thought, and probably none of us actually would have the nerve to say we knew what he thought back then other than what he said. But obviously, you know, he was working in a time of great confusion and change in America in the 50s and the 60s. If you think about what he was experiencing and what he was fighting for, I'm sure the logic that he brought to his argument, right, of equality and fairness, that all people are created equal, it all must have seemed to some degree so obvious that they were themes and ideals that had been set in motion in the late 18th century. Why are we still fighting over them in the 1900s? I don't know that the tenor of our time would feel quite so different to him. At the same time, I think he would have hoped that we'd be further along in our progress by now.
All Chicago public schools are not in session today in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. I feel kids should go to school on this day and learn about him. But if not, they could go to the Chicago History Museum, correct?
That's right. That's right. That's what we're here for. We are hoping to have everybody sort of take a break from the everyday and not just get a little Dr. King in maybe one class or two classes throughout the day. You can come to the History Museum and really immerse yourself in the history of King in the past, his ideas in the present, and forcing us to think a little bit about what King might want us to do moving forward. And we have programs here, we have exhibits here, we have lots of opportunities for people to engage with his ideas and his sacrifice and really revitalize what he stood for and what he was hoping we could all stand for if we stood together.
John, historians are in huge agreement that the I Had a Dream speech is one of the most monumental speeches of all time. Tell us a little bit about the background of that speech. Did he write it by himself, or did he have people helping him craft that speech?
You know, it's interesting. The story that I think really got a lot of exposure in the last couple of years is about how Dr. King had sort of talked about his dream in different circles with different people before that speech. This idea of the view from the mountaintop, the sense of the kind of country he hoped America would be in the future. And the story, as it's come to be known, is that in more recent times, is that perhaps Mahalia Jackson, perhaps other people who were there that day, heard Dr. King giving the speech that had been prepared, and shouted out at some point, or whispered to him, or made some call to him to tell the audience about his dream. And that was, while it wasn't something that was generated on the spot, it hadn't been necessarily part of his plan for the speech that day. And that he had, in that sort of spontaneous moment, to talk about what he imagined America could be, and what a world where we're judged by the content of our character could look like. He reshaped American discourse, really. I mean, the fact that here we are, more than 50 years later, still talking about that speech and the power and the impact of it is pretty remarkable when you think about the possibility that maybe it wasn't always part of the agenda for that day, that maybe it was something that was brought to his lips at the suggestion of people who were near him then, because they had been affected by his idea and his vision of for the America of the future.
And now there will be a reenactment this afternoon at the Chicago History Museum. All the information is at chicagohistory.org. We're talking with John Russick, Vice President for Interpretation and Education at the Chicago History Museum. David Jennings in our newsroom has a question.
One, and I don't want anyone to judge you for answering it, so I will preface this by saying that I am black. What do you think Dr. King would say about where the black community, part of the black community, is in 2018? We didn't have gangs in the 1960s, not like they are now. It's a whole other thing. How would he feel based upon what he wrote, the things he said, the steps he took? What would he say to people who think that joining a gang is a good thing?
Well, I think Dr. King was, if nothing else, he was compassionate. He understood that people made choices based on their experience, their understanding of the circumstances that they lived in. And to some degree, these are shaped by the environments and the people who have influence over us. And I think that he felt that even from the earliest times, parts of the American community might extend even beyond the African-American community, were shortchanged by a lack of education, lack of economic opportunities. And those could be reflected then in the choices we make and the sort of society we create. So I think Dr. King would have had a lot of compassion for people who might make choices that don't necessarily move society in the right direction. That said, he definitely was somebody who felt like there was a right way to live, and that there was a moral life that we all had to aspire to, and that applied to everyone across the spectrum of political affiliation, affluence, and he might even argue that folks who had the control, the reins of power, the ability to make change, had greater responsibility to the rest of us than the folks who are at the lower end of the economic ladder and maybe had been the victims of segregation or discrimination. I will say that that's something that I think is focused on here at the History Museum today. A lot of what we've tried to share was not just the inspiration of the I Have a Dream speech. I think our reenactment of that speech is really powerful, and Oba William King does an amazing job of bringing across the passion of that speech. But we also have the MLK Project, the Fight for Civil Rights, from the Writers Theater, and that's a really powerful performance that I think digs in a little deeper into the broader spectrum of the fight for civil rights beyond just the dream speech or even King's life in general. I think it gets us to a broader collection of ideas about what it's like to be discriminated against and how challenging it can be to pursue and achieve some sort of equality in America.
John, without a doubt, Dr. King's words and ideas were so strong and so powerful and moved the African-American community so much to realize that equality should be theirs and needs to be theirs. Do you think he swayed a lot of white people back then? Do you think he took people who really believed that blacks and whites were very different people, but through his words and through his ideas, they came to see that, no, there really shouldn't be a difference between the black and white communities?
I think the critical piece of your question is the statement the back then. I think that King had an effect on people back then. I think he did have influence. I think he was lauded for the things he said and his nonviolent commitment. But I actually think that part of what we all have to recognize is that it's our commitment to those ideas since then that has made this change continue. It made the change more real. That it wasn't just that King said those things. It was that they resonated with us. And over the years, we've done things like, how many kids in America grow up and don't know what the dream speech is? Very few, I think, can go through school and not hear that speech or at least know what it was about. Dr. King has a national holiday for him. You know, there are things that have happened over the last 50 years that have moved this forward. And I think that that's what we have to remember, is that Dr. King laid out a vision and that he told us it was our responsibility to see it through. And I think that that's a place where obviously we have work to do. We have much left on our plate in terms of really embracing equality and realizing it. But at the same time, I do think that his impact has been not just back then, but it continues today. And I think that that's what's really extraordinary about him as an American. He has influence beyond his time.
I know you're busy today. A lot going on at the Chicago History Museum, 1601 North Clark, right here in Chicago. You can go to chicagohistory.org. John Russick on with us. Are you good on time? Can you hang on and we'll take a quick break and continue?
I can. I'm always happy to talk about Dr. King and his time here in Chicago.
Excellent. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are honoring Dr. Martin Luther King today, 720 WGN.
John Russick is our guest. We're talking about Dr. Martin Luther King. It is Martin Luther King Day. John is the Vice President for Interpretation and Education at the Chicago History Museum. And, John, I want to make sure people understand about this exhibition, the museum's exhibition, Remembering Dr. King, 1929 to 1968. How long does it run for?
It's up all of 2019. So it's an exhibition of photographs and a story of Dr. King's life with a real focus on his time here in Chicago, because that is often known by few, just how significant his time in Chicago was, both as a opportunity for him to fundraise and generate money for the movement from sympathetic ears here in Chicago, but also to confront racism in the North, which was one of the roles Chicago played in helping the nation sort of think about the depth and potency of American racism in the 1960s.
When we first started talking to you, John, I mentioned that Illinois was the first state to declare Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday a holiday back in 1973. First of all, is that true? This is according to Associated Press. And second of all, why was it Illinois that started this whole ball rolling?
Well, Illinois became a leader in part because of Chicago. There was a great deal of sympathy for Dr. King here, and he had made regular pilgrimages to the city and sought out support before protests became more the focus of his time here. When he was looking for ways to fund the movement, he was looking for people who were interested and sympathetic. But then, of course, in the 60s, he also starts to come and look at Chicago through a different lens and really get us northerners, northern cities, to come to terms with our own brand of racism and the policies and systems that have been in place for a long time to make for an unequal inequality in education, in housing, in policing, that there were all sorts of issues that he found here that he thought needed to be exposed if there was going to be real progress in America. We needed to move beyond this idea that American racism was a Southern problem. And many people have written about this issue that for a long time people in the North sort of were a little more complacent about it. They really thought racism was so much more virulent and so much more intense in the South that they, even though they might be aware of it in the North, they didn't think that it was the center of the problem. And King sort of brought that home in the 60s. And as a result, Illinois became one of those states that really became pivotal in the movement to honor him when that started in the 70s and obviously into the, I believe it's 73, is that the date? Yeah, when that was first brought to national attention.
John, I saw a news piece about him once where they talked about, for all the people who loved him and who really owed him so much for changing their lives here in America, there were so many people who didn't like him and felt threatened by him, and that he was receiving death threats on a daily basis, yet he refused to live his life in fear. Can you comment on that a little bit?
I think that's what makes Dr. King so amazing in all this time later, is when you really you realize that it's a really challenging position he put himself in. He was an ambassador for the idea of nonviolence at a time when there were all sorts of folks who were pushing him to embrace a more confrontational approach to demands for equality. So there were people within the movement who found him to be reluctant and maybe too sympathetic with white America. And at the same time, of course, there were elements across the spectrum of white America who thought that he was pushing too hard. He was asking for too much too quickly. And, you know, people often say if nobody's happy, then maybe you're doing the right thing. And I don't know whether that is actually true in this instance. I just think that Dr. King had a really high wire act he was walking. He knew that if he didn't demonstrate that he was having success with his approach, his nonviolent approach, his negotiated approach to solving some of the inequities, the African American community was ready for change, and maybe some within that community were ready for violent change. And he also knew that if he didn't wasn't able to remain as the effective leader of the movement, others would step forward and might. He believed that he had the best path forward, but he also knew that if he hadn't demonstrated some success with things like the Voting Rights Act and the Fair Housing Act and things of that nature, if that wasn't forthcoming, if those things didn't happen, he would be replaced as the de facto leader of the movement. So it's sort of a remarkable time, and certainly a testament to his political skills that he was able to manage both the movement and keep the progress that he was able to achieve without being supplanted at a time of great division in America.
What a great way to celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You can go to chicagohistory.org or just stop by 1601 North Clark Street, Chicago History Museum. Do you have to reserve spots? Is this event free? What do we need to know?
So the museum is open today, like it always is, and it's free today for all Illinois residents and Chicago residents. So we have it's a great opportunity to come to the museum. If you haven't been here in a while, it's a great day to come and just check it out. But it's also, we've got some awesome programming going on. Like I said, there's the Writers Theater program. There's the reenactment of the I Have a Dream speech by Over William King, and then there's all sorts of craft activities. There are things just going on all over the museum, and of course there's the exhibition, this photographic exhibition of the life of Dr. King. So we've got a lot going on today. It's going on all day, so come anytime and enjoy, and come here to remember Dr. King and his legacy here in Chicago.
Thanks so much, John.
Thank you, John. Greatly appreciate it. Have a great day.
My pleasure. Thank you.
John Russick, the Vice President for Interpretation and Education at the Chicago History Museum.